The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, we'll look at the big issues as we approach Election Day.
If you've listened to a lot of the analysis about a recession, it's not whether we're going to have one. It's going to be how severe it's going to be and how long it's going to last.
House Republican leader and future speaker, if the polls are right, Kevin McCarthy, talks about the commitment to America.
Really, when you look at the utility of the commitment to America, and people say, what is it? It's a plan for a new direction.
Dennis Prager looks at the speech from Giorgia Meloni, the big winner in Italy's recent election.
I can't define myself as Italian, Christian, woman, mother.
Rough time for China, Iran, Russia.
It was a bad weekend to be an authoritarian.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program as well at TownHallReview.com. All eyes were on Florida this week as Hurricane Ian came ashore as a monster Category 4 storm. Our hearts and prayers are with all those impacted by the devastation. Beneath the weather-related crisis facing our friends in Florida, there are some pretty basic fundamental issues facing the electorate as a whole across the entire country as we approach Election Day. How do things look? I turn to a regular on my program, Byron York of the Washington Examiner. Byron, sometimes the best question when it's as complicated a situation is just, what's top of your mind right now? What do you think is going on?
Well, the thing I'm thinking about right now is midterms and the lessons of history, whether lessons of history work until they don't. And the reason I was thinking about this, you've been talking about this ABC Washington Post poll.
Right.
It's done by Langer Research, and they included a note in their analysis that went along with the poll, and it was about the midterms and Joe Biden. Now, the poll shows that Joe Biden is dragging his party down. Job approval rating, 39%. Just 35% of Democrats said they want him to run in 2024. So the analysis says each election has its own dynamic. That's the CYA sentence there. But in midterm elections since 1946, when a president has had more than 50% job approval, his party lost an average of 14 seats. That's even when they're above 50%, they tend to lose some number of seats. When the president's approval rating has been less than 50%, as Biden's is by a considerable margin now, his party has lost an average of 37 seats. Now, the argument for Democrats right now is that our condition today is just so different that this historical lesson does not apply. My feeling is that it probably does. On the other hand, I do remember, as I'm sure you do, the Blue Wall, which was this group of states that had voted Democrat for president in all six elections between 1992 and 2012. And the idea was that in 2016, with Donald Trump running, they would vote Democrat again, like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and they didn't. So I'm just trying to feel for my own use how valuable these historical analogies are.
An off-year election is not dominated by a president. It's dominated by party politics and by general trends, much like Great Britain's most recent elections, Sweden's, and Italy. I talked about this yesterday with Walter Russell Mead, whose, by the way, exploration of the origins of Trumpism at the end of the Ark of a Covenant is quite unique and impressive. I talked to him about yesterday, the anger with elites is deep in the world, Byron. That does not help out the Democratic Party.
It does not, and I do think you saw that in Italy. The anger with the elites in Brussels is huge. So yes, this is happening, and to me, all the signs point still to a pretty large Republican victory in the House. I know you're more confident in the Senate. I just don't know. I can't tell right now. But as far as the House is concerned, it looks like a solid Republican win to me.
Washington Post, CBO, White House plans to relieve student loan debt costs $400 billion. New York Times headline, yep. White House student loan forgiveness could cost about $400 billion. Wall Street Journal, Biden's student loan forgiveness plan could cost $400 billion. CBO. They never talk about the student loan bailout. They never discuss it. I think it must be the worst political move ever in a fall run-up.
That was absolutely fascinating. You're right. And, you know, Tom Bevin this morning tweeted that this $400 billion number said this makes an absolute travesty, a mockery of our system where Congress is supposed to appropriate money. And the president just spends it on his own. Now, it was interesting. It has been noted that the president, when he announced this debt cancellation, said it was a, quote, game changer. And since then, he's given more than 20 speeches, and he doesn't mention it. I think he's mentioned it in one of them. So he's going out and campaigning, and he's going out and talking to fundraisers and things like that. And he's not talking about the student loan relief, which is really interesting for something that he called a quote, game changer.
The Ellis News Items newsletter from Substack this morning is simply put, the global financial crisis is upon us, and none of the tools that were used in 07, 08 can be used this time because inflation is a core part of the problem. They can't cut interest rates. They have to raise them. They can't print money. They have to squeeze the money supply. It's kind of dire. Now, America is going to be the only one not crushed by it, but some segments will be because some of us depend, not me, but some of us depend upon international markets, which are collapsing.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I haven't read that newsletter, but I've read similar analyses. And I'm afraid they're true. I don't like to go on television or radio and say, oh, the sky is falling. Things are going to be terrible when I don't really know that. So I won't say that. But, I mean, when you listen to Chairman Powell, you're clearly saying a recession is going to happen. And if you've listened to a lot of the analysis about a recession, it's not whether we're going to have one. It's going to be how severe it's going to be and how long it's going to last.
How do things look? I turn to the House Republican leader and future speaker. The polls are to be believed, Kevin McCarthy. All right, Leader McCarthy, I want to go to the commitment to America. I've read it. I've gone through it. The most interesting thing is the proposal that you have come up with for a select committee on China.
The thing that your listeners have to understand is commitment to America is something the entire conference has worked on for the last year and a half. So what I would like to do, if we're fortunate enough to win the majority and I'm speaker, create a select committee on China. They would look at areas that we have fallen behind on China, threats, technology, all the different aspects. You know, when you think about critical minerals, we've got a new mine up and running. China controls 90% of critical minerals, but they control 95% of the processing of critical minerals. Then we look to where they're even going in our food supply. We look to what they have done, technology stealing. We look to what they're trying to do with Taiwan. I think we just need to have a bipartisan one message from America and make sure we don't fall behind in any areas of where we go.
The collapse in Afghanistan is the worst thing to happen to American national security since Vietnam. I don't want a long-term process. I just want to look at the last 60 days with the select committee. I know Armed Services wants to do this, but I would love to focus some hearings on what the hell happened, Leader McCarthy. Any chance of that happening?
Well, you don't have to lobby me. This is something personal to me as well. If you read in the Commitment to America in this section, you know, we have an economy that's strong, a nation that's safe, a future that's built on freedom, and a government that's accountable. In that accountability section, we have directly in here that we are going to look at. We don't have to study all of Afghanistan. We just have to study those last 2-3 months. Why did the president ignore the recommendations of the military? Why did it go so wrong? We never want to repeat that again. We ended up with 13 new Gold Star families, and we didn't have one casualty for a year and a half before. So I don't want a long drawn out. I know we've got a lot of individuals in the military that are willing to talk about it and make sure that it doesn't get repeated. We're going to look at that, get that report back, and have hearings directly on that. As when the DOJ going after parents for calling them terrorists, knowing where the origins of COVID actually began. There's a number of areas where the Democrats have just ignored doing anything. There's a responsibility when it comes to Congress, regardless of who's in the administration, that you should have these hearings, you should have this oversight, and that's exactly what we will do.
Leader, can you stop the student loan bailout? The president hasn't mentioned it since he did it because it's such a disaster in the minds of ordinary Americans. Is there a way for the Congress to stop that?
Well, there's a way to go about passing something in the House, but remember, the president's still there. Will he sign the bill? Will you get 60 votes in the Senate? The courts is one area, but there's ways to pull back on that. And what your listeners have to understand, it's not what the president says, that he's going to waive or forgive some student loans. No, what he's doing is taking somebody else's debt and making somebody else pay for it, which will be all of us. You watch what the CBO came out with and said it's more than $420 billion. That's $420 billion more that it's going to cost us. Again, causes inflation. So we can go about in the appropriate process putting certain elements into that package to try to see if the president would sign them and dare them. But the other thing we can do on the very first day is repeal those 87,000 IRS agents.
That's going to be the very first bill on the first day. I want to talk to you about something I learned at the gathering in Wyoming, the ESG and the proxy services. I mean, that's an antitrust waiting. So let's start with the ESG and the proxy services. That's an antitrust violation. I learned about that at the conference you held.
You're right, 100%. And what this ESG is doing, it's making the entire country weaker. It's making China and India stronger. It's destroying our companies, but it's just totally playing politics. It is antitrust where we go, and you're going to see us tackle that in part of the commitment to America as we go forward. I mean, really, when you look at the utility of the commitment to America, and people say, what is it? It's a plan for a new direction. And the sad part is all the challenges that you have, all these challenges from inflation, from crime, to the border, to our weakness around the world, it's all created by Democratic policies. And they have no plan to fix it, but we do. That's why I challenge all your listeners, go to commitmenttoamerica.com, read about it, join with us, because this really is a plan to change this country. And I believe this election is a hinge election. This is a once-in-a-50-year election. It almost feels like 1979, 1980 again. Think about it. When was the last time you had inflation like this? When was the last time we had an energy crisis like this? When was the last time we had the strongest military in the world, but our commander-in-chief looked weak? When was the last time we had Americans held hostage in the Middle East, in Iran and Afghanistan today? All of this is set for what was 1980 about? Well, it was Ronald Reagan talking about principles and policies to make America stronger. That's exactly what the commitment to America is, based upon the policies that will put a new path and a new direction to the next century will be ours.
Coming up, Dennis Prager looks at Giorgia Meloni, the presumptive next prime minister of Italy.
I can't define myself as Italian, Christian, woman, mother.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy enters our 25th anniversary year, we've remained committed to a single truth of world history, that ideas have consequences. To understand these ideas and their impact on today's politics, and to test them quantitatively, requires the unique curriculum we offer on our Malibu, California campus. Apply now for fall classes at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Up until this week, I doubt many of you had much familiarity with Giorgia Meloni. She's the head of the Brothers of Italy party in Italy, and she is looking to be the next prime minister of Italy. She'd be Italy's first female prime minister. But don't look for laudatory pieces celebrating her achievement. The elites, including the elite media, panic, labeling hard right, descended from fascism, on and on. Here's Dennis Prager with a look at Meloni's recent speech.
Why is the family the enemy, she's asking? Why is every identity an enemy? So that's her opening comments. They hate all identities. I'm reading the subtitles. I do not speak Italian. Here we continue with her speech.
For those who would like us simply be perfect consumer slaves. So they attack national identity, they attack religious identity. They attack gender identity, they attack family identity. I can't define myself as Italian, Christian, woman, mother. No, stop. That was awesome. I want to read that exactly what she said. This is such an important speech. That's why the New York Times hates her. I can't define myself as Italian, Christian, woman, mother. No. God, this woman knows what she's talking about. All of her identities are worthless. Christian, mother, Italian, woman. All right, continue. I must be citizen X, gender X, parent 1, parent 2. I must be a number. Because when I am only a number, when I no longer have an identity or roots, then I will be the perfect slave at the mercy of financial speculators. Hold on there. The perfect consumer. I think this is an attack on the World Economic Forum and on the EU. That's what it is. You are economic beings. That's all you are. It's a perfect attack on Marxist outlook on life. You're soulless consumers. She's exactly right. Continue, please. The perfect consumer. And there's applause. Again, you can watch this. That's the reason why. That's why we inspire so much fear. That's why this event inspires so much fear. Because we do not want to be numbers. We will defend the value of the human being. Every single human being, because each of us has a unique genetic code that is unrepeatable. And like it or not, that is sacred. We will defend it. We will defend God, country, and family. Okay, stop there, please. We will defend God, country, and family. To the New York Times, this woman is a proto-fascist. God, country, family, that is despicable to 90% of college professors. We continue. Those things that disgust people so much, we will do it to defend our freedom because we will never be slaves and simple consumers. This is the new prime minister of the first female prime minister turns out to be a right winger. Let's continue, please. Chesterton wrote more than a century ago. Let's see if I can find it. I so identify with her. Fires will be kindled to testify that 2 and 2 make 4. Swords will be drawn to prove that leaves are green in summer. The time has arrived. We are ready. Thank you. Okay. That was the end. Great. That's it. Chesterton wrote that. Chesterton was a prophet. That's exactly correct. Swords will be drawn in order to protect the idea that leaves turn green in summer and that 2 and 2 is 4. That's exactly the age in which we live.
Democracies around the world are going through times of upheaval, but the autocracies and authoritarians around the world are having quite a time of it as well. James Carafano, a 25-year Army veteran, joined Dan Prof and Amy Sullivan on AM 560 The Answer in Chicago.
So let's start with Xi and the rumors that were swirling around that somehow he had been deposed and he had been locked up as some part of some potential coup. Gordon Chang said the rumors likely untrue, but just even the rumors swirling about such an occurrence, what does that tell us, if anything?
Well, it was a bad weekend to be an authoritarian. You had in China, the whole shtick in China is we are inevitably moving to the future and we are the great power. And so these kind of rumors of internal discord, they're just amazingly embarrassing and weakening to China's prestige and power. Remember, the alternative model, the West is falling apart, and then people are talking about the leader of China being gotten in a coup. So that's an embarrassment. In Iran, you have protests going against all over the country and horrible repression, and the protests just keep building. not likely to come to anything because we've seen this before. It'll be violently repressed. But the fact is, the Iranian regime is a little busy today. And in Russia, you have this unbelievable mobilization, which has just created demonstrations all over the country. And men trying to flee the country. Again, how embarrassing is talking to a guy from Azerbaijan, because there's visa-free travel between Russia and Azerbaijan. A one-way ticket to Baku is $10,000.
Wow. Hmm. Well, yeah, how many have fled? Because he called up, what, 300,000?
300,000. And people are just bailing up Finland. And you know, again, regardless, it's just incredibly embarrassing. So these regimes, which are better than democracy, stronger than us, you know, the future of history, they've had the kind of their worst PR weekend ever. Joe Biden wouldn't know that, by the way, because I think he was at the beach.
And what about this prospect of Putin using limited nuclear weapons to, you know, shock and awe is his way out of his problems, and what that would mean if he did?
Yeah, well, I like anybody else, I don't know if he will or he won't. What I will say is, use of tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine is not going to turn out favorably for the Russians, and there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, I was in the military for 25 years. You do what's called fire and maneuver, right? So the purpose of dropping a bomb or a hand grenade or a nuclear weapon, doesn't matter, is that fire destroys or suppresses something that then allows you to maneuver to some objective. It's not clear there's anywhere in the theater where the Russians can do that. First of all, the Russian military is probably completely untrained to operate in a nuclear environment. It's very, very likely that if there's a mushroom cloud, half the Russian army will just jump up and run away. So that's not very likely. I was just in Ukraine. These people are not going anywhere. You drop a nuclear weapon at them, they're not going to stop fighting. Matter of fact, they're going to fight harder. And they'll probably get a lot more weapons from the U.S. and other countries to do that. And let's be honest, if Russia thinks it's isolated now, if Russia drops a nuclear weapon on another country, what nation in the world is going to try to make an excuse, except for China, try to make an excuse for Russia? So even countries that are doing business with the Russians now, because they really don't have any choice, because they're just trying to not make anybody angry, they're going to have to stop. And so Russia, they will go from being what they are today to basically being another North Korea. I don't know if Putin can survive that.
Coming up.
But I would say at this moment, I look at both parties and I see chaos and disorder.
Walter Russell Mead looks at American politics when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Stay with us.
This is Molly Hemingway. In 2020, millions of Americans experienced the most troubling election of their lives. That's why I wrote the book Rigged: How Big Tech, the Media, and Democrats Seized Our Elections. I write about Mark Zuckerberg's efforts to take over election operations in key states, how the coronavirus was used to force election laws designed explicitly to help the Democrat Party, and much, much more.
It's now in paperback. Don't miss Molly Hemingway's book, Rigged: How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. Available wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. As we look at American politics on the right today, I go back to 2015 and the presidential debates in the run-up to 2016 election. That's where it became clear something big, something foundational was happening in the party, a party I've been a part of since 1974. Walter Russell Mead captured this, and captures it well, in one chapter in his new book, The Ark of a Covenant: The United States, Israel, and the Fate of the Jewish People. Mead was a guest on my program. You are not a partisan. I have no idea how you vote. And I've known of you and been around you for, I have like zero idea of your political views. Is that intentional?
Well, it may just reflect to you that my political views are hard to characterize. I will say I do think that it's out of the center right and out of these complex of American values that I think the future can most easily and most beneficially come. But I would say at this moment, I look at both parties and I see chaos and disorder.
Well, there is. And I want to go right to the Republican side of that, because I'm living that story. And I've been living that story since the debate stages of 2015. But I also am mystified by what happens still, because it's moving so fast. But the fundamental tectonic plates of American politics are moving in a way that you grab hold of and try and explain. And those three terms need definition, as you gave them. The Lodge consensus, Jacksonian Americans, and Sunbelt Republicanism. Because they all, let's start with the Lodge consensus. What is that, Walter Russell Mead?
That was the set of ideas after World War I that Americans kind of adopted to try to deal with this new world. It was a more dangerous world than they expected. They somehow were more vulnerable to what was happening overseas than many had expected. But they wanted to promote democracy and human rights and so on abroad. But they really wanted to limit American engagement to economic engagement, maybe a little bit of political engagement, but no military engagement overseas. And in order to kind of square the circle of the gap between what they wanted, universal peace and democracy, and what they wanted to do, which was not very much, they really resorted to kind of an American form of magical thinking, of believing that the arc of history would make everything work. It's something that's, we're an optimistic people by nature. We do have this faith in a divine providence moving humanity forward. But the idea that that arc of history is going to move to your convenience on your schedule, that was where the Lodge consensus, I think, went wrong.
You know, I remember when Francis Fukuyama's book came out, The End of History, I so wanted to believe it was true, Walter. I really wanted it to be true. And therefore, I fell into the idea, as did most of Americans' national security, foreign policy elite, that we'd won, right?
Exactly. History was over and we won. And now, once again, after 1990, we could have the perfect world and we didn't have to work very hard. No heavy lifting, right? We could lose weight and eat everything we wanted. That's what we believe.
The peace dividend. Remember the peace dividend? Gosh, what a stupid idea. Okay, page 568. The popular demand to be ruled by people who share one's values, mores, language, and culture has been the strongest political force around the world in the last 200 years. I would add, also in the last 2 days in Italy, Walter Russell Mead, that desire drove the return of the center-right coalition to power in a decided way in Italy. I don't think it's the return of fascism. Poor political reporters who don't know much don't understand that page 568 of the Ark of a Covenant, in fact, explains what happened in Italy yesterday. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do agree with that. If you go back 200 years, most people were ruled by rulers who didn't speak their language necessarily, who they had absolutely no connection with. But on the other hand, the government couldn't do that much to them. The czar was all powerful, but his bureaucracy was weak. And if you live 500 miles away from Moscow, the authority of government was limited. But modernization, development means that the state becomes more of a factor, more powerful, more of a factor in your life. And so you want to make sure that the people making those decisions are people who care about you, who you trust. And so that drives anti-colonialism, get the imperial rulers out. We'd rather be ruled badly by our own people than be ruled, quote, well by these very nice British civil servants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the populism that we see in the West today is the chickens coming home to roost. That kind of demand to be ruled by people like us, like me.
So let me bring it back. That's the Lodge consensus. We govern ourselves. We govern ourselves according in America to do little, get a lot sort of optimism coming up. The American electorate is waking up.
Very often, people who aren't professionally concerned with politics, busy with their daily lives and so on, politics goes on. They don't pay a lot of attention, but they do now.
More with Walter Russell Mead when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Walter Russell Mead's new book is not centered on American domestic politics, but he captures so well what we see happening today that I focused my conversation with him on his last chapter in the Ark of a Covenant, the United States, Israel, and the fate of the Jewish people. Let's pick up my conversation with Walter Russell Mead. What is a Jacksonian American?
Well, Andrew Jackson was the first truly populist president of the United States, and he was in his time as polarizing a figure as Donald Trump. When I try to describe his approach to foreign policy, I take one example. It's the early 19th century. There are Indians, Native Americans, runaway slaves in Florida who were being armed, which was Spanish territory at the time, who were being armed by two British traders legally under Spanish law. And they are carrying out, you know, military activities in what was then the United States, resisting General Andrew Jackson and his troops. Jackson sends American forces into Spanish Florida, crosses the international frontier, grabs these two guys, British traders, brings them back into American territory, tries them before a military tribunal, and hangs them. That helped make him so popular that his election as president was guaranteed. But this is, you know, this is a way of thinking about American foreign policy that is very widespread. I wrote about it in my book, Special Providence. And it, you know, people like to think that, oh, we Americans, we're humanitarian lawyers, you know, or we're great commercial traders and we're builders of peace. But really, most of the time, Americans are not that interested in what goes on around the world. But if somebody attacks us or threatens us or the allies that we feel in honor bound to defend, you get this incredibly strong reaction, kind of like on Pearl Harbor.
Yamamoto, you've awakened the sleeping giant. And
that's
I think that when you write about Trump tapping into that, you have hit the mother lode. Would you explain to people Sunbelt Republicanism?
Well, as you say, the Sunbelt Republicanism is, you could also call it Reagan Republicanism, but it was a, it was an odd thing by Republican historical standards. For one thing, it was really strong in the American South, which up until that time had been the most anti-Republican region, and especially in the white South. And it was kind of a mix of the very sunny optimism. I mean, at the time, it's hard to remember, but back when California was a red state in the Reagan years, California conservatives were some of the most cheerful and optimistic people anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
I think one of the hidden stories in American politics is the fall of red California and its transformation into a blue state, deep blue state, has left California conservatives, have made some of them among the most pessimistic and dark, you know, with the greatest fears of the future, as they fear that what happened in California could spread.
So those Republicans have scattered. Now, I want to read to you that they are Sunbelt. They're optimistic. They believed in free markets. They believed in international trade. They believed in the use of American power, strong defense, all that good stuff. Walter lays it out. Now the key paragraph from page 268. For many years, liberal internationalists and neoconservatives failed to grasp the political force of new sentiments. The Brexit vote in UK and Trump's 2016 election demonstrated the power of the electoral force, but many still underestimate its potential impact in the United States and beyond. The new populism was not simply the product of economic dissatisfaction. It drew much of its power from the growing gulf between American corporate and political establishment that emerged in the post-Cold War era and large sections of the American public for whom the priorities and values of that multicultural, cosmopolitan, and post-Christian establishment were fundamentally alien. Donald Trump, in other words, Walter Russell Mead, rode to power on horses he did not breed or train, and that they're still out there riderless right now, and I don't know who's going to jump on them, but they're very fast.
That's right, and they are they're awakened now. You know, very often people who aren't professionally concerned with politics, busy with their daily lives and so on, you know, politics goes on, they don't pay a lot of attention. But they do now. And Trump has energized a wave in American public sentiment. And they are, you know, I think they are now, some of them are disillusioned with Trump. Some of them are still loyal, but they are looking for a new leader, a new vehicle. I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
I think you're right. There was an aesthetic critique of Donald Trump, which obscured his fundamental political maneuvering. The aesthetic critique is he's too brash, he's too bold, he's too vulgar, he's too cruel. And a lot of people didn't like that. And it's not Sunbelt Republicanism, for sure. It's Manhattan, Queens Republicanism. But the underlying forces that you talk about, they haven't gone anywhere, Walter. They're still there. And they may have been hidden or camouflaged by the Biden victory, which was an exhaustion victory, but they haven't gone away.
No, and you can see that in polls. Recent polls show that Trump would beat Biden in a rematch if it were held today. And somebody like Governor DeSantis, who is clearly appealing in many ways to the Trump legacy, is doing quite well. So the Republican Party is the people who sort of hope that we can get back to the pre-2016 Republican sort of Bush establishment party, I think are mistaking the nature of Republican politics and the Republican coalition.
Completely. And now I want to tell people why that shows up in a book titled The Ark of a Covenant, The United States, Israel, and the State of the Jewish People. Donald Trump understood, like no previous Republican, how much Israel mattered to Americans of every party. And he did what no one would do. He moved the embassy. He recognized the annexation of Syria. And he brought the Sunni Arabs to the table with Israel. And for that, a lot of people are still applauding, Walter. And you noted. It was unbelievably hard for him to push into the face of that.
Right. Well, let's take moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. A lot of folks may not know that from 1948 on, when Truman recognized Israel, we kept our embassy in Tel Aviv, which is a coastal city, is not Jerusalem. But from the first day of its existence, Israel has thought of Jerusalem as its capital. It's the only place in the world where a country is seen not to have the right to designate its own capital.
Coming up.
The more your enemies attack you, the more I believe in you.
A few more minutes with Walter Russell Mead in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt.
Hi, I'm Gino Geraci. This Week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. American parents are fed up with schools undermining their authority.
They've been pushing policies on children without the guardian or parent's knowledge at all.
The medical establishment is also targeting our young people.
We need an investigation into Vanderbilt, putting profits ahead of children.
We'll look at Banned Books Week.
The ALA has decided to shift its focus towards protecting and promoting sexually explicit material to children. And that's what Banned Books Week has become.
And the broader trend from public school libraries.
The agenda being presented by so many of these libraries is just an absolutely unvarnished embrace of the progressivist agenda.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Some of the dynamics we see here in our country, we've been talking about this with Walter Russell Mead today, are by no means limited to the United States. The most recent example still unfolding is in Italy, and what we see with Giorgio Meloni that Dennis Prager looked at earlier in our program. Let's catch a few more minutes of my conversation with Walter Russell Mead, author of The Ark of a Covenant, The United States, Israel, and the Fate of the Jewish People. Brexit, Boris, Sweden, Italy. They're all telegraphing the same thing, Walter Russell Mead. And I wonder if you think it's going to break out in Israel as well with a return of Bibi.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to predict an Israeli election. About the only thing you can predict is there's going to be more of them.
Yeah.
But Bibi is a leader very much like Trump in this way, that he's seen by a big chunk of Israel as their representative. And both Trump and Bibi can say, the establishment hates you, and that's why it hates me. And that means that when Trump is criticized by experts, when Bibi is indicted by a court system that many Israelis see as kind of still under the rule of the old Israeli establishment, that to their core followers, this is just not an issue. In fact, the more your enemies attack you, the more I believe in you.
Walter, let me conclude our conversation about the Ark of a Covenant with optimism, pessimism. I'm very optimistic about America because I think it's going to throw off the administrative state. Doug Ducey, Mr. Sunbelt Republicanism personified, the ice cream man who took over Arizona and turned it into a great place, just passed a law, signed a law, that makes the funding for school students follow the kids. They can go wherever they want, religious or secular, any public school they want. They get a voucher. The money follows the student. It's revolutionary. I think school boards really screwed up the Democratic Party badly in the last 2 years, and that the blowback is going to be intense. And if the Republicans are smart, they will ride that horse. It's not, they didn't raise it up. They didn't train it, but they got to jump on it the way Trump did and run against entrenched elites. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I do. I would also say, you know what? If you homeschool your kids, maybe you should get the money that the government would otherwise use. I mean, you're saving the taxpayers money. Obviously, you can't do that without some kind of conditions and responsibilities. But you know what? I mean, again, our public school system grew up, you know, at a time when you had, you know, America was filling with immigrants who didn't speak the language, didn't understand the culture. And also farmers were being driven off the farm as the Industrial Revolution was changing things and were moving to the city. And they relied on the teachers, the professional, competent teachers, to tell their kids the rules and explain.
Thank you for joining us today. Catch the complete conversation with Walter Russell Mead at townhallreview.com. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. If you have not signed up for our podcast yet, why not take a minute to do so? Go to townhallreview.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers David Pichon, Michael Cook, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.